Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-hosts...
Alpha Shard.
R underscore Robo One.
Hey, Scott.
Hello, Dan.
No, not Scott.
Oh. Magic doesn't like me. Shock.
This is episode 157, and I'm Ricardo Rovo, also known as R underscore Rovo One. With me, we have the typical hosts, Dan Q.
May all your patches be retroactive.
Phil, also known as the Mean Tim.
I woke up this morning, my right arm was numb, so the obvious logical conclusion is that having right arm numb is awesome.
Matt Jen.
Parrot, carrot, why would you want to wear it?
Good old Mackie.
Hello, Internet.
And Scott / Shard. I don't know how to call him.
It's Alpha Shard, and I am not addicted to the Dutch.
Official Civilization 5 patch notes. I got some people thinking there was a Civ 5 patch already out. Why I hesitated. Anyway, it's just fall, and yes, that is fall, not a fail patch. It is a fall patch, because there's no estimated time of arrival other than fall, which goes into December here in North America, so it could be a while. Why don't you just say the final 2012 patch? But it's a little wordy. Maybe fall isn't, you know, it's a little catchier.
Hey, come on. Can't it be the autumn patch?
It's funny you said that, as a matter of fact, because there was an exchange with regards to that on the 2K forum, where there was the discussion between the difference between fall and autumn.
And then spring.
That sounds excessively on topic.
Well, see, what happened was, is someone said, oh, this patch is only for North America. That's a shame. What?
None for you people. Only for us.
T4P says, it's a fall patch. We don't have fall in Europe. We have autumn. And it's in the Southern Hemisphere, it's spring. You guys forgot to turn on the irony meters, which... In any event, this list is long. We are not going to read all of it. We could.
Yes, you could. You,
he didn't say we could. He said we're not going to. And I concur with that sentiment.
Yeah, it's only like 5 pages long.
But it is broken down into bug fixes and balance changes and polish, not to be confused with the Polish, which we will inevitably get to at some point.
Oh, come on.
What?
The Polish were added. Didn't you know? It's in there.
I know.
After 10 years whining.
Yeah. They got their own section. It's the Polish section. Or Polish. But, you know.
And so I think it's only fair that we put our guest co-host on the spot. And by, you're thinking, now, wait a minute, Dan, there are actually two. Our first guest co-host, which is Ricardo.
I don't have the latest expression of CF5. If you people that frequent CFC know that I have my differences about the game. But to be honest, I actually like some of the things I'm seeing here. One of the things that I really, really expect to see and maybe will make me play CF5 again will be the optimization about rendering. I have a pretty bad computer, pretty much in the limit of what CF5 can run, and that would be a big difference for me. I would say that it looks that it's a pretty well-rounded patch, and, well, we will see in 20th of December.
Yeah, I guess I should back that up. I mean, the optimization is going to be huge for a lot of people. But the funny part is, you know, there's a huge list of individual items, and some of them are just like tiny. But the optimization ones are just a couple lines, but they're probably some of the biggest impacts on the game. some many performance improvements, particularly in the renderer. Pathfinding fixes and optimizations. That was always considered something that's slow. And then my personal favorite, the optimized overlay system. So your culture borders, basically the entire map and everything that's on the map. And the optimized overlay system is now making half the draw calls that it did before. So somebody went through and did a major amount of improvement under the hood. So it'll be the question of, does it increase performance is so much that people will notice it.
Because if it's just taking 10 seconds off between turns, we're not going to notice that so much.
Not 10 seconds, no.
No.
Never 10 that. Seconds. You.
You're never going to get the turn times down to like a second or half a second without basically ripping the entire game mechanics out of it and just basically having a dot and you're moving a dot. It's not realistic.
That's ridiculous. You could have turn time rollers of like a second in early on Civ 4. I mean, obviously it gets longer
early.
As the game goes on, but Civ 4 was crappy in its optimization too.
At least at start, Civ 5 really had crappy times. I do remember having 1 hour of in between turns and before what patch 161, the, one of those nice computers that the graphical cards did not like Civ 4.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things for me is just that this is actually appearing on a patch log at all. Yeah, that's a very encouraging sign to someone who's been complaining about it for years that, yeah, now they're actually doing something about it. So I will wait. You know, maybe it'll be significantly better than before.
Although, I guess on the polish side, to add to that, since we were talking about between turns, there's a UI overlay now that shows which AI is processing its turn. So you can now see which AI or which mechanic or whatever. So I'm sure city states and barbs and all that other, whatever else is happening between turns might be in there as well, unless they just leave it with the major civs. But you can see who's chewing up that turn time.
Yeah, so if you see unknown civ chewing up a lot of turn time, you may be in trouble.
Yeah.
You may get a surprise visit.
Now, natural 20 on the thread on CFC, to the expectations that are already building up for this patch, has said one of the highest quality patches of any game in recent memory. And
think what?
Let's not say things like that until we actually have the patch realized. I would say it is one of the most comprehensive patches for Civilization V that we can expect to see. You see lots of qualifications in that statement. Mm-hmm. And with that, someone said, hey, what about vanilla Civ 5? What's all this Gods and Kings stuff? And as the junior moderator for CFC, Gigamon says, the game executable is common for Civ 5 in the expansion. The changes made in the EXE will apply to both. Now the question is how much of those patch notes are relatable to executable common or the DML, XML, Lua, X-separated, and how much of the latter will be ported back to vanilla. I expect that if anything does apply to vanilla, it's just because it's inherent related to that EXE. But if you go through the patch notes and stuff that they're talking about here, we're talking about, in some cases, vanilla civs, but we are talking about Gods and Kings.
Pretty much. There is a lot of references about religion and civilizations that aren't in the vanilla Civ 5.
So we've looked at the polish and some of the, you know, the bigger items that it said really didn't take a lot of lines in the patch notes, but are very significant. So perhaps now we can start looking at some of the specifics, those that we think are particularly important, and perhaps going now in order of the patch notes, going back to bug fixes.
I was looking at the exploits, and I couldn't believe that you could get two free techs from the rationalism finisher twice, so you would get four free techs. Is that what that's saying?
You can cycle through it.
That was just the last episode we were talking about that, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So obviously Firaxis heard that episode and went, oh, dang, we need to do something about that.
Damn right. Oh. They listen.
Welcome, Civ community. You're welcome. Props to us. Props to us. Plus one.
Because they totally didn't notice this before, Dan.
No. I'm glad you acknowledge this too, Mackie.
You're just being silly, Mackie.
And it's funny that you mentioned that one specifically, Scott, because in the chat, the great Mr. Popo said, could they not release a mini-patch beforehand to nerf just that. But I wouldn't be surprised if there is a mod out there that actually fixes that in the interim. I don't know.
Basically, Dan is saying, fix it yourself.
Stop using research agreements.
Oh, I wasn't going to go that far.
Oh, that's chill.
We also talked about that last episode.
Yeah, no. No, the two free text, I mean, just don't use it. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Yes, it's going to get fixed, but just don't use it. And then you won't have to worry about it because the AI doesn't use it. So you don't have to worry about that. I mean, yeah, multiplayer games. But if you see somebody flipping back and forth, like we said last time, kick them out of the game.
Or just give them.
Well, or in the game, right? I mean, easy, easy.
That too.
Obviously. Yeah, it was all quiet. Yeah.
Problem solved.
You mentioned multiplayer.
Oh, dear.
No one did.
Well, okay. Well, no doubt. Again, we're recording this less than 24 hours after the patch notes have been released, so I wouldn't be surprised if people said, hey, where's the multiplayer fixes?
No. Yeah, somebody already did whine about that.
And as much as I actually, when I play Civilization V, a lot of my Civilization V play is now multiplayer as opposed to single player, but there are certainly people who play Civ 5 single player only. I don't think there are too many people that play Civ 5 multiplayer only. And even in multiplayer, you may have AI proper, like another civilization, or you probably also have city states from time to time, or just in your own play, some of these changes in here will have an impact. I'm not trying to diminish concerns with multiplayer because we still have those frustrations, but it's not just quote-unquote strictly a single-player patch. But yes, there is nothing specific for multiplayer except Hot Seat. I did see something for Hot Seat. Apparently in Hot Seat right now, submarines are always visible, and that's being fixed. So,
haha, take that. Yeah, basically, I mean, the entire patch list does help multiplayer on the balance side, on the bug fix side, but it's all the stuff in the game. And usually whenever somebody says no multiplayer patch changes, it's not about the stuff in the game that they're usually complaining about. It's the stuff around the game. So, you know, making it work.
Imagine, as the newest regular co-host, under bug fixes, what are you most excited about to see?
The research agreement code was previously giving double credit to research. Now stop bugging me. this actually relates to a topic that I think dead now. The 25K research agreement. It was found out shortly after Gene K came out. I figured it out, or at least I knew about it. And I told people, don't worry, it's a bug. And then they complained that I kept telling them that don't worry, it's a bug, but it's an exploitive bug. And they're like, but come on, tell us about it. No one cares about the Hall of Fame or the Game of the Month or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, and I refused to tell them just because it would horribly skew all of that. And some people actually do care about it. So there you go. That was the problem. Double credit for research overflows. And it is extremely exploitable. As in, you finish a research agreement or you great scientist bulb at the end of an expensive tech, but put your next tech as something like sailing or optics or something like that. And then all of that extra beakers that would go into the very next tech promptly gets added to your research agreement. So the next one. So you line up research agreements one turn after another and watch yourself go from normal amount of research to an insane amount of research per research agreement. So yes, that actually should be under exploit rather than diplomacy, but whatever. Stop asking me. It's fixed now.
Or will be, rather.
Or will be.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now you just kind of told people how to abuse it in the meanwhile, but you know.
The countdown is on.
Yeah, the countdown is on. You have this much time to abuse it.
Anything else under bug fixes?
Oh, correcting an issue that caused the AI to attempt coups too often. When the chances of success were too low. Pissing me off constantly.
I think that was last episode too, actually.
Yeah?
Wow, Fraxis and 2K got a lot of good ideas from our last episode. I'm so glad to see such a speedy follow-up on this.
Yes, it's very quick. But yes, that's very nice. If the AI stops trying to coup at 2% so often, then we don't have to have the lol, you died constantly, or the, why did I just lose over 100 influence?
We can still say it.
It just won't happen.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of stuff in the bug fixes and lots of stuff in the balance.
We'll get there in about 3 hours.
No.
The interception promotions now help the right unit, had previously been reversed. Evasion promotion helps the right unit, had previously been reversed. So you add intercept promotions, and it actually helps the thing you're getting intercepted, you're trying to intercept rather than you. And if you add evasion promotions, it helps to intercept you rather than evade.
Wow. Well, okay. Rolo beat me to the one that's obviously the shining beacon on this patch list for me. If it pans out to being an actual significant improvement in the gameplay experience, and that's optimization. But there are some other things in this list that I see that are encouraging to me, because I have been complaining about them since a couple of years before Civ 5 came out in Civ 4. And they just carried right on over into Civ 5. And so now we're starting to see a few of them. For example, under AI, automated workers that don't have anything to do will not consume all their movements. That's a nice one. The other one is fixed an issue where automated workers evaluated danger incorrectly and consequently behaved incorrectly. Yes.
Suicide workers.
But you know what? It's still better to get it eventually rather than not at all. And the pathfinding thing was also a very nice fix, because you know, if you're playing through the game quickly, you know, giving units orders quickly one after another, it's just killer to be on your own turn and waiting for multiple seconds per every action. So hopefully that makes it a lot better of an experience to play. I do have my fingers crossed on this patch.
We'll see if it's actually how much it helps when you're actually playing the game, but under units, better next unit selection, because used to, you know, you'd be over here trying to fight a war and then would jump to this worker back in your empire. It's like, no, that's not what I need to look at right now. Ah, which in multiplayer, that was horrible. You'd be trying to fight a war with this. I mean, in Civ 4, it was, you had the problem, but in Civ 5, you have the same problem. You're over here trying to fight, it jumps back to worker in your empire and you're on a turn timer. I don't have time for this game.
And actually, right with that one is the point after that, which is the unit cycling improvement. When a unit is promoted, do not cycle immediately off that unit.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah.
Please stop it.
Maybe if I've missed something, I need to use it on something. You know, just a thought.
I just promoted it.
What did you mean? There's nothing wrong with the user interface. Thank you. Thank you for Axis for finally looking at this stuff.
Well, it's also, there's a few things in there related to it, like unit list now resorts itself correctly when a unit is promoted. The unit list that it's using for the next unit, and that is now going to be promoted. So all your highly promoted stuff will probably be close together, so the unit list will keep it clean.
For me, under bug fixes, a lot of it has already been discussed, but religion, correct peace-loving belief so it doesn't negate other happiness benefits from religion.
We love peace. No, you people over there being happy for us, stop that.
AI will now build more workboats and will improve oil plots in the water.
Yay!
Oh. Yes!
Finally learned to drill for oil?
Yeah.
That's a bit of an eyebrow raiser that's still around.
Added a check to make sure that after a city is disbanded, for example, raised, the units remaining on the plot are allowed to be there. If not, for example, naval units, then they are moved to the nearest valid plot. Two final ones for me under bug fixes that we haven't talked about. Number one, have great engineer pick both the wonder and city it needs to be built in. The bug was that the AI could repeatedly try to build a wonder in a city that it couldn't. Ah, silly AI. Yes.
I want to build this wonder. Great. Can you build it over there? No. Well, stop asking me. But now.
Now we know it was slowing down the turns.
And finally, we kind of teased this a little bit at the start. Under miscellaneous, added missing Polish Dawn of Man audio, as some people have interpreted it, or adding missing Polish Dawn of Man audio, except Polish is capitalized. It is a capital P.
It is definitely Polish. It is absolute Polish.
Polishing the Polish, what?
Easy, Mackie.
Yep.
I never thought how both of those words were spelled the same. I love that. If we get nothing else from this patch, we had a good laugh.
Yeah. I would have expected this to be a lot more troll bait in the threads, considering all the different flamey, why are my polls not in the game, and people saying we don't want to see that.
Now imagine, the trolls do have to sleep sometime. We haven't been 24 hours yet.
Yeah, that's true, but it's Polish language, Dawn of Man audio.
Balance changes. Ricardo.
Well, I'm liking to see a lot of stuff that is under the AI and not only. Well, great sucker for everything that makes the AI play better in any game. But some of these things are quite startling. The AI will now liberate cities and resurrect players. That is actually good for them when they are close of a diplomatic victory and they did the votes, or even when they simply get one of those crappy cities that in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I got your city back. Here you go. Piece of crap.
Scott?
Pillaging tiles now awards 25 hit points to pillaging unit. So now they get HP as they pillage?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. It's going to make horse units brutal again.
Yeah.
Like they needed to be made better somehow.
They took away all the fun out of them, so.
I still think 25 hit points is too much. 25 hit points is one quarter of your health. And if you have something like the Sippy, you can take an attack and move around pillaging everything for free, because it doesn't cost you movement points, heal back up, and if you have logistics, you can take another attack at full strength. Just kind of do a little circle and just pillage way too much.
A little bit exploitative, no?
Potentially. Potentially. You still have to test it out, and I'm sure if somebody does a lot of work on mounted units and maybe even gets March and double medic to see if that somehow kicks in, I could see that potentially being exploitive. But if it's just straight, like normal melee units, crossbows, like every unit except for the mounted one and specific ones with no-cost pillaging will be probably fairly normal. It'll give a boost. It'll make you not have to back away from stuff quite as often.
And humans will be better at defending that kind of stuff than the AI, because we'll be like, okay, well, I'm not going to let them just auto-pillage my stuff, then I'm going to block it. And then it becomes rather costly. You can get zocked. You know, a lot of things can go wrong for the mounted unit, and then it stops being so easy to just heal up constantly. Unit that can do it without movement points. I don't know. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Like I say, if they balance, they drop Ironclad to 45 combat strength, probably a good thing to keep them from being too powerful.
Well, especially with their plus 33% versus cities.
Yeah, yeah, I noticed that.
Because it was about the same as a destroyer at 50, so.
And actually with that, the item right underneath that, since we're talking about that, remove plus 33% versus cities from battleships. Aww.
But I like sinking cities with my battleships. Oh, wait.
Yeah, and battleships require oil. Come on. Now I understand why.
Yeah. Well, the battleship is effectively 100 combat strength versus cities with the 33%. The next ship that could have even anything close to 100 versus cities is the missile cruiser at the end of the tech tree, which doesn't have a bonus versus cities. So it kind of made battleships way too powerful versus cities. Battleships will still be like 65 combat strength versus cities, which is fine, and they have 3 range up to 4 range.
Since we're talking about battleships, I think someone needs to make reference to another game, so you scaled back my battleship. There we go.
Ouch.
Bum, bum, bum.
All right, Imagine.
Oh, God, where do I start? Just so much stuff.
For the beginning.
More like, where do you stop? Yeah, exactly.
How much time do I have for this? I guess key things that would be useful to me in the long run. Okay, let's go for the big one. Again, diplomacy. Haha. Ones that I like are diplomatic globals. So each AI has an opinion of you as you do things, and all those little red and green letterings that changes their opinion. And they have different thresholds. So whether or not you're a friend, an ally, they kind of like you, they don't really like you, they hate you, or they think you're, you know, the worst thing on the planet. Those got stretched out a bit for their thresholds. So what that basically means is it's going to take longer for them to decide that you're like the most evil thing on the planet and must die constantly, as in get stuck in the constant war / hate. But it's also going to be a little harder to make friends and allies. So you'll have to do a little bit more to get those allies. Whereas before, you would randomly have them decide to doff you or, you know, declare friendship with you when they're just, you know, they went from guarded last turn to neutral this term, and now they want to be your friend. I think there's some balance in there that is very, very useful.
Well, you took mine, so that's nice.
I said there's just so much stuff in here.
Yeah, pick a different one.
Yeah, but we both gravitated to that one.
Yeah.
I think we all gravitated to that one.
Yeah.
Prize ships. I get it's something new for Gods and Kings where you could just capture them. It also is the Ottomans' new unique ability where they get price ship on all their ships. But it was so overpowered, especially running around with privateer trying to pick up nuclear subs and battleships and missile cruisers and all that other stuff. And you'd have a 100% chance to get them. That was just dumb.
I mean, you submarine, get up here. We're Shanghaiing you.
Yes, the privateers. So it's been balanced a bit better. So you have 50% chance of converting a ship with equal intrinsic combat strength. What that basically means is if your listed combat strength, not the promotion based, intrinsic, so your listed combat strengths of the ships are the same, you get a 50-50 shot. If your ship is more powerful, then you've got even more of a shot at it. And if you're weaker, as in a privateer going after a battleship or a nuclear sub, you'll have less of a chance, but you still have a chance. Floats between 28% and 80%. So there's a chance, and it's never 100%, because, you know, you never know when that guy is going to set off the bomb as you're trying to take it over just because he doesn't like them.
Joke. It's nice to see the diplomacy part scale, too. It's only been requested for a couple versions of Civ. We get that, too, in the future. That's nice.
Yeah, I guess with game speed, right?
Yeah, yeah, all the game speed scaling. Yeah, because that's always been a pain. You know, game speed scales, but then some of the stuff like peace treaties and other things like that stayed the exact same. So the relative value of them across game speeds weren't exactly the same. I guess one of the things I've complained about for a very long time, and apparently people are listening, pushback air logistics promotion for bombers specifically. So it requires bombardment 3, not 2, or air siege 3, not 2. Basically, you can't have your air repair logistics bombers after 2 promotions, or 4, technically. Makes bombers slightly less overpowered.
Needed.
Yeah.
I pick under general. Tweaks to the culture border growth, especially this bit, should get coastal resource tiles a bit sooner. I just had this in a game the other day. I had fishing. I had a workboat ready, but it would not pick the fish tiles. What is wrong with you? That's more food. You stupid game. Why are you picking this plains tile and these grass tiles over here on the other side of the city? Why are you not picking up my fish? Why are you not picking up pearls?
What, you don't want to spend gold to buy it yourself? Come on.
That was annoying.
Yeah, when it picked the desert or the mountain over a resource, that was always a bad thing.
Yeah, should mildly steer towards tiles that are near unclaimed resources. Yeah, that would be great. If you have to pick that grass tile, could you point it in the direction of the horses that are over there, you know? And resource tiles that are further out, like it's saying 4 or 5 out, because sometimes, yeah, you would like to pick those up.
So in other words, you like this change that causes the game to troll you a little less.
Yes, but thank you.
Okay, good. All right.
I mean, someday I might actually get the achievement for buying however many hexes, but I'd rather it be because I want to buy those hexes, not because the game is going, nah, you don't need fish. You don't want the city to grow, right? AI will no longer ask other players to join in a war when they're already involved in at least one. Thank you for acknowledging that I'm busy in a war.
Well, I think it's also to stop the AI from trying to get into multiple wars all at the same time. Because they do ask the other AIs to join in wars.
A little less dogpiling, maybe?
Maybe. We're a little less at war with 4 civs all at the same time, and none of those wars are going very well. So let's start another one.
Everyone gets pissy, too. They refuse to help us at war. You refuse to help us at war. But will they join a war with you and they are in a war? No, not really. That's a fun, long-standing thing in Civ as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. I am surprised Imagine didn't cite this.
Oh, there's a million freaking things in here.
He said he could go on for hours, but he was trying to be polite. He is Canadian, after all.
Well, I guess so, except it was in the first paragraph of points. Austrian unique ability balance changes.
I know, I was looking at it. I'm looking at the mercantile city-state changes. I'm looking at the new Grand Temple. There's so many things.
I'll come back to Austria, even though I already mentioned it. For me, even bigger than Austria, to me, this applies, period, in Gods and Kings, regardless of whether you have Austria in the game. I love actually the qualification a bit in here. That's funny. Reduced happiness a bit from mercantile city-states. You no longer get +1 bonus happiness going from friends to allies since you already given the luxuries then, and eliminated the +1 happiness entering the industrial era.
Hallelujah. It gets better.
Bug fixes. Mercantile city-states now only get a unique luxury for their first city, and not the cities they conquer. Unique luxury is removed upon capture. Players can no longer get it by taking over a city-state, and unique luxury is given back upon liberation.
Yes. So no more attacking mercantile city-states to get their unique luxury. It goes away if you do that.
In one of my most recent games, the AI took over a mercantile city-state and raised it and chose not to settle again. I guess maybe that's why they raised it. So I was able to go in and settle the city and get that unique luxury, and that's not going to be able to happen anymore.
Yep.
I will move on. Austria. Increase the cost of a city-state by at least the amount of gold you will get from scrapping their units. Must be ally for 5 turns before you can undergo a diplomatic marriage with a city-state. And my first reaction was 5 turns, so regardless of game speed. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, wait, didn't we just balance stuff for game speed and then add something that isn't balanced for game speed?
Oh,
I have magic numbers.
And of course, for those listening, what are you talking about, gentlemen and lady? Diplomatic marriage is the ability where you can spend gold to annex or puppet an allied city-state.
Basically own it.
It wasn't the last episode we talked about this, but it was definitely this season. Seeing as how Gods and Kings was released this calendar year, Dan will, duh. Under religion, follower and pantheon beliefs provide local happiness, founder beliefs provide global happiness. And I'm going to quote, imagine, local happiness is the happiness generated from buildings, not wonders, and is used to negate the population unhappiness in a specific city. So, for example, a circus or a theater. Basically, no matter the source, if it comes from a building, it's local and only helps with being able to put more population into a city. Elsewhere under religion, 2 more. AI, buy missionaries in a city with the Great Mosque as top priority, even over Holy City if different. And of course, that's because all missionaries born in that city, where you have the Great Mosque of Dijin, can spread religion 3 times as opposed to 2.
More like Dijin.
Dijin.
And then finally, tall, wide religion balance change. Add grand temple, national wonder. And that's all we get. What a tease. Mm-hmm. Come on. Mean.
Apparently it exists.
It exists.
Not going to tell you what it is or why.
No. This is a big one under diplomacy for me that hasn't been talked about yet. With making deals, AIs will notify you when they're not willing to give enough on their side to make the deal work. This addresses some issues where you ask an AI to propose a deal and they say, we can't make a deal. And then you propose a lopsided deal and they accept it. They will say, we aren't willing to give you enough to make this a fair trade. I always loved those interactions, and soon they will go away.
Yeah.
Equally, I think, important, assuming you have city-states in your game. We attacked your protected city-state statements are now triggered by damage done, for example, killing a unit rather than simply being at war. As a result, the statement should no longer be triggered by a quick succession of declarations of wars, such as those automatically done by a city-state changing allies. Good.
Yay. Ballistic now require railroads. Just have to throw that in there. This is actually important. It's an important tech tree change, and I think it's the only tech tree change in the patch notes.
The only one we know about.
Yep. But no more cannons and rocket artillery without artillery. Now that you'll have railroads, land ships are only a tech or so away, so you might see the AI with more tanks in the game. And it also means that stuff like the Neuschwanstein and Brandenburg Gate might not be so player-only driven, so that they'll actually have to, the AIs will actually go through that tech path, so they might have a shot at picking it up. So competition is good.
Under AI, tactical AI improvement. Spend more gold on defense. AI will now spend gold at their cities where tactical dominance is even before it had to be enemy dominated. AI will also now spend money on naval and air units for defense in such cities. Before it was only land units and defensive buildings. And you know what? Honestly, I was happy with AI will now spend gold.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. I don't care what the rest of it is. I can move on. Thanks. Yep.
Hey, look, I've got 40 grand in money. Therefore, I'm winning the war. What? How about you spend some of that? And we'll talk. And now they will. The amount of gold they have on hand is considered part of their military might when it comes to deciding who's winning.
AI will try to reclaim lost settlers and builders.
Oh, well, that would be nice. I mean, although it's a great bonus when you run into Barbarian Camp and they've left you a present.
Like, woo, free worker.
All right.
And more aggressive offshore expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of course, now more is relative, of course, but I think we'd be happy with any increase in offshore expansion, assuming the map is suited to that, of course.
Yeah, but it's going to make Polynesia crazy. Yeah. Well, no, it's just the, more the fact that they can go before astronomy. And if they're willing to go more often now versus later, that means that they're going to be soaking up a lot of fun stuff, especially on a Terra map. That should be funny.
AI will now consider annexing cities it has conquered.
That was freaking time.
Or the AI will not consider annexing if it is trying to win a culture victory or their empire is currently unhappy.
Well,
oh, man.
I'm a 28 happy. I should totally annex the city.
And then right underneath that, increased happiness flavor for circus to match Colosseum.
Yeah, basically, make sure that they build the circus, especially since it's the cheap version. Yeah.
Let's pay for a Colosseum. We don't want freebies. No.
Actually, I think more importantly is the one underneath that. The tactical homeland AI improvement. Don't heal if you're getting shot. As if you're losing more hit points per turn than you can heal.
Shoot back at the other guy and
leave.
Then heal.
Leave. Don't just sit there. That's actually going to be very important. And maybe as a sweet crossover moment, provide a way for the Lua to query if the UI is in touchscreen mode.
Oh, tie into next topic.
Yeah. Why would they want modders to be able to find out if the UI is in the touchscreen mode? That is
because
crazy.
There's a touchscreen version.
What? No.
Oh, my God.
You can't possibly be talking about the fact that Tim Kipp, the system lead for Civ 5, gave an interview with PC Games Hardware all about some optimization work and other stuff going on in Civ 5 and Windows 8 when he was at the Intel Developers Forum.
Yes, it was in San Francisco, California from the 11th to 13th of September.
Yep, there was also a YouTube video on the 12th of September. And amusingly, this was in there, and some of the words that got used within this interview, optimization, yes, it's a touchscreen, and you can actually see in the video him playing Civ 5 with a touchscreen, so being able to move units and everything else, which is kind of interesting. Especially when you go, if you constantly poke at it going, hit this, hit this, hit this.
That actually sounds pretty fun.
Yeah.
Attack. But, tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, but he used an Intel Ultrabook. So he used a laptop, not a tablet, with touchscreen mode running Windows 8. But he mentioned a patch in it. And I'm kind of surprised no one really got in there. But the Windows 8 touchscreen mode and tying into the modders, obviously, all of that's coming down in a patch that's free so that if you own Civ 5 and you happen to throw it onto a touchscreen, you'll be able to use it so you don't have to worry about it. And it'll be tied up to when Windows 8 launch comes out. Now, if you're thinking, this video says it'll come out before Windows 8, or about the same time as Windows 8, and it's a patch. Do you think this patch is going to come out the same time as the fall patch, possibly, giving us a time frame for when that patch is going to fall?
Why are you using logic on this show?
No.
Why are you using puns? That's Dan's job.
Yeah, I know. I had to troll him a little. Catch a troll for the win. If you watch the video, you can see him hit end turn in one part of it, and you can see the UI overlay that they're talking about in the patch note. So you can see the AI's turns flipping past. So if you want to see what the UI overlay looks like, you can watch the video.
On an article on the laptopmag.com, it was noted that Kip also said, although the game hasn't been tested on a tablet, it should just work as well. You do not need to use the keyboard at all in order to play the game. Some gestures may work in Windows 7, but of course that the game is being specifically designed to run on Windows 8. Recorded for episode 126 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Alexander, and Civ Battle.
There's a resource sale chart from Wayne, and it kind of ties into a little bit, for instance, when you're talking about setting on a luxury resource or just getting a luxury resource that you can then turn around and settle. For standard speed, what amounts you can get either upfront gold or gold per turn. It seems that with gold per turn, you can potentially end up making more money as opposed to a huge upfront cost. Although, of course, I think we've talked about before that a favorite thing to do is to sell a resource to a civ you're about to declare on in Civ 5, because then you can instantly turn around and declare on them.
And, well, in Civ 4, you couldn't lump sum value for per turn obligations. It didn't allow it. That's something that's only been allowed in the other Civ games, like I think 3, obviously 5. I'm not sure about 1 or 2. I never tried to abuse this to its potential when I was that young. But you couldn't do it in Civ 4. You could not sell, like, clamps for 200 gold. It wouldn't let you. You could only sell it for gold per turn. And then, of course, you could break it, but then you'd lose the clams or the gold per turn, depending on what side you were. There was no forced peace treaty in Civ 4 except for when somebody made a demand or friendly request of the other, and the other side accepted it. So, like, when Montezuma asks you for paper at 1500 AD and you give it to him, he then cannot declare on you for 10 turns. But if you made a straight resource trade, you could declare on the same turn you make it.
Dave McW, in one of his posts, says, the AI likes to squander its gold on useless things. I have to find the AI likes to hoard its gold to not get useful things, but okay. Maybe both, to a certain degree.
Recorded for episode 153 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Me and Team, Majin, and Travis ATWA.
JPBar81 over on the 2K forums has done a leader attribute spreadsheet, and now it's all updated to include the gods and kings stuff. So you've probably seen it before, where it's got all the things about their personalities and what they like to do, and the not-so-secret fact Gandhi likes nukes.
Yeah.
Not secret at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said not secret.
Added Korea and all the expansion civs as of Civ 5 version 1.0.1.674. He also added new entries of CS approach bias, bullying, flavor for using nuke, and flavor for espionage. And what's interesting is in terms of the ratings, their attributes in terms of their biases, the higher the number, the meaner they are. So like there's my column like mild, moderate, and mean. Most of them are mean. Most of them have some type of flavor in terms of some preference. About half of them do. About a third of them are kind of moderate. And then there are about, you know, about 18% that are kind of mild. And there is a image as well as a spreadsheet. And it's much easier to print off the image than it is the spreadsheet. So you can have that as a nice reference in your hand. You can actually print it out. That I appreciate. And of course, it's pretty, like Mackie said, so it's shiny, and therefore that's a... Even if all the information was wrong, it's gorgeous. He spent a lot of time on this, and it shows. And the fact that he's keeping it up to date shows that he cares.
Yep. I mean, this is some one of those little highlight things. For the little stuff that you never really pay attention to, and, you know, if you're doing overviews, it's some things you're never going to say. But the fact that a number of civs got their approach bias for war dropped by quite a bit, and even being the deceptive ones have dropped. And obviously now that religion is in the game, they reflavored religion for a couple of them, for the vanilla civs, that is.
Right.
So even though Alex is slightly less biased towards war, he still is biased towards war. If you see him, he will denounce you within 3 turns.
Unless he's a random personality, in which case it's kind of a smorgasbord.
Yeah.
You might also be at war with someone else already.
Yeah.
Recorded for episode 156 with Dan Q, the Me and Team, Majin, Oz Benno, and Peng Chi. You know, if there was one thing I would like to see changed with Ruins, it's a very minor thing, and it has to do with the culture one. Especially early on in the game, right, you get that culture boost, and then you're probably going to be able to choose a policy, whether it's a first or a second or a third or what have you. The thing is, if you're not paying attention and you're not thinking about it, you can roll over the turn and then not choose your next policy until the next turn, even though you got that faith, because the game doesn't actually prompt you
yeah.
for that.
Now,
for us experienced players, oh yeah, I need to go to the social policy screen. But for newer players, they're not probably going to be thinking of that. They shouldn't have to think of that. And you're probably thinking, but Dan, it's just one turn. Yeah, but it's one turn in, so ruins, it depends on the size of the map, number of players, blah, 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 but ruins are probably going to be gone in, what, 25, 30 turns? I don't know, I'm just throwing a number out there. So one turn, that's a very significant point, and that actually has nothing to do with what the ruins are, but rather how that's communicated to you, which is actually another issue in multiplayer, that sometimes it's, okay, I just explored a ruin, what did I get? I don't see it on the screen. And I'll say, why don't you check your culture? Can you actually get another social policy? Or check how much faith you now have. Do you suddenly have a whole bunch more? Or even gold. I mean, I think the gold one is on the screen ever so quickly, but some of the other ones, you gotta check your interface, and it's like, no. You're not doing anybody any favors by doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's just a generalized thing. It has nothing to do with just the runes, because when you have honor and you go kill a few barbs, you're gonna fall over the limit for the culture as well. The thing that doesn't work, of course, is the faith one. Like, if you get a faith rune or you meet a city state and you get put over the line for the pantheon, you can't select a pantheon or a religion that turn. Like, you can't select the pantheon. There's just no chance, unlike culture where you can. And then 3-4 AIs all finish their pantheons that turn, and, well, too bad for you.
Yep, because I got to move before you. Haha.
Yep.
Yes, that's worse.
Playing with the Graph Civ AI option on. As people should know, most of us already passed by Civ 4, even if they already forgotten that it exists. Playing with the aggressive AI option was put in Beyond the Sword, the last expansion for Civ 4, and it basically makes the AI exactly what it says, more aggressive. That is not exactly like playing better. It's like giving rabies to a mad dog, but in our topic here, we have Kexington888 asking about trying this option, the aggressive AI, and decided to use the standard size 18 sieves.
The best part of his opening post, in my opinion, I may be the only one, with aggressive AI on, I was hoping not to meet any warmongering sieves.
Oh. Wait, hold up. Oh, well. Why the heck did you turn on aggressive AI if you didn't want to meet warmongers? Play,
well, there is an option called Always Peace. Maybe
aggressive always AI, always peace. That'd be awesome.
Shouldn't one not be selectable if you pick the other?
Not like picking raging barbarians and then no barbarians.
Well,
yeah.
At least generated extra something or something. I can't remember huts maybe.
Well, C4 is filled with all of those things. For example, if you can play Always War and liberate colonies. In the moment you liberate the colonies declare war on you. It makes all the sense of the world, isn't it?
That's such a good idea. Let's just make half of my cities declare on me.
Well, continue to reading. It got some super interesting readers to have in aggressive AI. Montezuma, the most sane reader in C4, as you all know, and Catherine, the one that backstabs, the one reader that can backstab at friendly. It reminds me pretty much my first experience with aggressive AI that I got Sitting Bull, Ragnar, Montezuma, Brennus, and one or two or of those lunatics.
Shaka?
Oh, yeah, Shaka. I can imagine pretty much what he got. Turn 50, contact Monty. Monty walks to him and says, I don't like you. War! All game I have is constantly being at war. Oh, really? The responses are interesting. Unfortunately, the topic does not talk a lot about the aggressive AI option in itself. The aggressive AI setting is pretty much, like I said in the beginning, it's like giving rabies to a mad dog. It just makes the AI more aggressive. They will declare war on settings that you aren't used to. They will build more units, but they will not be anything smarter about the use of it. Basically, yes. You can imagine every Civ becoming a Ragnar or a Shaka and above. The issue about that is because this option was not truly tested. Phyrex never does that. And the Civs tend to declare war too soon and with two weak units. Of course, that if you aren't unprepared and want to go a typical Oracle Gambit or something like that, and you have only a starting warrior, you will suffer. But if you make a couple of archers or something like that, you only have to see whoever smashing X-Men after X-Men after X-Men against your archer, and then you will get some pretty freaky promotion, something like City Garrison 3 with 3-4 pretty fast. And after that, as they exhausted so much stuff in units throwing against you, can pretty much mop the floor with whatever you get. I never had an aggressive game that I had to pass beyond rifles, and most of them I use pretty much maces to do the cleanup, because they get so exhausted, do unit after unit after unit after unit after unit, and they don't make buildings. Sometimes they even skip barracks. If you put a little extra of that, it doesn't make any sense, I know, but it only gets rough in levels where the AI gets enough bonuses to compensate for that. Say something like Emperor or above. In there, gets slightly harder than it is in the regular game at the same difficulty, because the AI can sustain those units and has enough bonuses to pay for those units, because those units have a cost, of course. Not only in hammers, but in everything else, especially gold, and gold, it's maintenance, it's the city empire. Everyone that remembers C4 knows that.
It's worth noting, though, even in Deity and you know, those upper levels, the AI does pay a price for building all those units. You see a little decrease, and what was it? Like, I think it's, 4 years now? Maybe 5. I remembered Unconquered Sun was saying something along the lines of Deity aggressive AI being kind of lame, because either you get killed right away or you've basically won, you know? He had Shaka declare on him, and he basically took out Shaka, and he's like, well, the AI is tanking so, like, 10 cities now, there's no way I'm going to lose this game. And that kind of sums up aggressive AI well. I've had fun abusing it in Hall of Fame, because, you know, there's a lot of little quirks in these settings, and one of them is that AI who have aggressive AI picked will almost never go for a cultural victory. So I'm going for a Deity domination game, and I'm like, well, you know what, I'll just click aggressive AI and put Shaka, Monty, and Genghis Khan on a map with guys like the Malinese, that would be Mansa Musa, and Gandhi. So it's guaranteed war, and it's going to be between them, because they start off hating each other already.
Yeah, because
that is there until permanent alliance is permanently allied, and I have a couple spots in the Hall of Fame from that trash. It took me a half hour to play that game. But, because it kills things like culture, you can really take advantage of the aggressive AI, and they will throw their units away, too.
And if you add something like a fractal map or continents, just to spice things up, the AIs in the other continent will enter in cycles of perpetual war, something 2,000 years war, with them throwing unit after unit against each other, and then you get there with the rifle army and clean them both. But the issue is always like that. The AI in C4 is not exactly the top of the box. And it gets even worse when you get out of the standards, between commas, options. And being aggressive AI, not a standard option, it's pretty expectable to see that. If you try to play any of the other options, you will see that, maybe except no espionage, because the AI pretty much does not understand espionage, so taking espionage of them actually makes them to play slightly better. But if you play always peace or any of the other options, the AI will be far worse than in the standard, between commas, setting.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
From TG Daily and Sean McLaughlin, we have rightly pointed out that if you're a gaming journalist and you're not really into Civ, you're not going to get into all the nuances of things that we talk about here on the show. That's fine, because we certainly don't know the nuances of a lot of other games out there to varying degrees, depending upon who's on the panel, la 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 la. Often, what type of game does Civ get confused with in the strategy genre?
Tower defense.
Not quite that bad.
Minecraft.
In fairness, there's Civilization IV War of Two Cities, which is very similar to that, actually.
StarCraft.
Yeah, in that, and the fact some people say, oh, Civ is one of the best real-time strategy games out there. And we're like, oh, my gosh.
It's called.
You know what? Shane outdoes all of them, because he starts his article, out of all of the RPG games on the market.
What?
See ya.
And,
Civ is not an RPG.
It has more RPG elements than RTS elements, because you do have units gaining experience and taking promotions and therefore becoming stronger. So it's closer in that respect, because there's no real time involved at all. It's completely turn-based, so...
Multiplayer,
well,
real time.
Multiplayer is quasi-real time. Counter-troll is up. Repeat, counter-troll is up.
Well, I think perhaps with that, the AI is waiting for us to play.
Oh.
Shall we play a game?
That is another game.
Episode 157 with Dan Q.
If you can exploit a little bit, you can exploit a little bit more.
Makalua.
What did I say about no singing? Why must you make me repeat myself?
Fill the immune team.
So hot.
Not Jim?
No, I'm just not going to do it.
And our guest host, Ricardo.
Thanks. Why do I have to be the last one?
No, I'm the last one. And Alpha Shard. Wait.
Oh, I've been trolled again.
If we don't get any calls, this will probably just make it to bloopers.
Yes.
Pretty much.
I pretty much dwell there anyway.
Well, you cut out there, Phil. What were you saying?
Yeah, you just disappeared.
Oh.
It was something that was, and that was it.
Oh, interesting to me. I was pretty much done then. That's fine.
We asked you to repeat it just for that. Can I have those 3 seconds back of my life?
No. No. I'll take more seconds from you in the future, too.
I'm kidding. Speaking of many things, we could talk about maybe a small elephant in the room, or perhaps a larger one, depending upon your preference for play.
I think that's a contradiction in terms, Dan. Small elephant.
They have miniature elephants.
Elephants of different sizes, Mackie.
They're closet elephants. Yeah. They're a little tiny. They run around. They eat Cheetos.
Yeah.
They're baby elephants too, Mackie.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going to troll you now, Scott.
What?
This doesn't apply. Just play random personalities, and we can just ignore that point altogether. Okay. Things come in threes. I've only trolled two people, so there's still one more to go. You could be that lucky one. Again, why are you talking about yourself?
No, you were the one talking about it. They put a great moss to me in the game. I mean, come on.
I'm having a hard time pretending you're not here. But anyway, no, it's
That's pretty rough.
There's the third person I trolled. Imagine, there. Achievement unlocked. And just so we can say, this episode is not just about directly or indirectly the upcoming Civilization V fall patch. We're going to talk about something in Civilization IV.
Right.
That game still exists.
Okay. Oh,
the most polished game.
Super troll for the win.
This reminds me of something when I was in high school. Teacher gave a sheet of paper with all of these things to do, and we were told, read through the entire sheet. And the last point was, don't do anything else on this sheet. Just sit and watch your classmates behave like idiots. I'm paraphrasing slightly. So we should have all of these fixes, and then at the end, we're not changing anything. Ignore everything else that's above. That would be awesome.
So how did that experiment work out?
It was funny for me, not for a lot of other people.
Oh, really?
Does it say please read all instructions carefully before beginning or something?
Yes, that was the...
Oh my gosh, okay. Well then, yeah, they have nothing to be angry about. They didn't read the instructions, so they, you know...
We are going a bit off topic, isn't it?
Well, it isn't.
A little bit. Right? Not that that ever happens on this show.
Nah.
I mean,
nah.
No. No.
Recorded September 22nd, 2012. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.